Jesus tells us to take up our cross and follow him. You're listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities, and it is our aim to lead you to the cross through the teaching of God's Word.
Come break our culture, tear down our pride. Lord, take your church and purify. Oh, we are ready to stand in your love. Come, King Jesus, deliver us. Oh, my King is coming. Restless hearts, be still.
He had his own property confiscated and given to Esther, who again makes Mordecai the steward of that property. And so God just flips it around on the guy, even after his death. Haman's wife, who had counseled the man to build the gallows he himself was hung on, is evicted from her home and her position, because she had a position too. And so she was taken out of the way. Not mentioned in the passage, but that's obviously what would go on. All of this is a great illustration of the proverb, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children, but the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the righteous. You don't always see that, but when the times that you do, it's like, that's really good. That's a good thing. Then you have the promotion of Mordecai. And so Haman had received undeserved honor, while Mordecai was ignored. And again, we talked about this last week. Mordecai had literally saved the king's life. Haman was nothing but a kiss-up. And Haman had received honor while Mordecai was ignored. And what God does is he reverses the situation, not just with Haman's proclamation in the streets, where he had to go through and proclaim Mordecai to be an awesome man, riding him around on the king's horse with the king's robes on him. Not only with that, but with the confiscation of Haman's own position. And in all of this, you never see Mordecai promoting himself. He's always quiet. He's always humble. Doesn't promote himself. He always sits back and he is allowing the Lord to take care of these things. Turn over to Luke chapter 14. And again, I know that most of you know this, but this is stuff that goes against the grain of what our world tells us to do all the time. Starting in verse 7, Jesus is at a dinner, and so he told a parable to those who were invited when he noted how they chose the best places around the table, saying to them, when you are invited by anyone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in the best place, lest one more honorable than you be invited by him. And he who invited you and him come and say to you, give place to this man, and then you begin with shame to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit down in the lowest place, so that when he who invited you comes, he may say to you, friend, go up higher. Then you will have glory in the presence of those who sit at the table with you. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. And so Jesus, again, goes against the culture. It was the same thing back then. If you wanted to be somebody who was known, be somebody who was recognized, you had to promote yourself. And even in the seating around a table, you can promote yourself. Do you guys notice? I get invited to go to dinner with people and do stuff like that, and I'm always careful about where I sit. I walk into the room and, it's like, I don't necessarily know where the dad of the house sits, but I'm always going to stand and wait and be told where I'm going to sit, because I'm not going to go over and sit in his chair because it's out of line. And if I'm invited over to somebody's house and we're going to watch TV, I'm looking at what the seating arrangements are. And if there is a nice, comfy, recliner, I'm not going to go plop my bulk in that guy's recliner at that point. He may offer it to me. And a lot of times, even if he offers it to me, I feel weird. And I just say, I'm going to go sit over on the couch here by my wife, and that kind of stuff. And again, the reason is because of specifically humility. There are places you don't belong and places that you're not worthy of, even though you think you're awesome, And so we have to watch out for that. And this can be in situations where you have interactions with people too. I don't have a whole lot of good things to say about Bill Clinton, but there is one thing that this guy did that was really good. when he would walk into a room, he would look around and he would find the one person that wasn't being spoken to. And he would walk over to them and start up a conversation. And so you can imagine in the circles that he ran in, how many people were in a room that were prideful and arrogant and, you know, thought that they deserved attention and they demanded it in all kinds of different ways. And the guy would walk in the room and go to the person that nobody's paying attention to and talk to them. And that's something that we should keep in mind. That's how Jesus is. That's how he does things. And so we want to be in the same position as the Lord in all of this. There's a passage in Proverbs, you can turn back to Esther. There's a passage in Proverbs that says, a man's pride will bring him low, but the humble in spirit will retain honor. That's Proverbs 29:23. And here's another one, this is a great one. Let another man praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips. And so we need to be people who walk in humility. When you walk in humility, what happens is God exalts you. And if you want to be exalted, the best way to get exalted is by being exalted by God. And so God will exalt you. Then you have the intercession of Esther in verses 3-7. It says, now Esther spoke again to the king, fell down at his feet, and implored him with tears to counteract the evil of Haman the Agagite and the scheme which he had devised against the Jews. And the king held out the golden scepter towards Esther, so Esther arose and stood before the king. You know what she's doing here? She's coming in unannounced again. And so the whole thing with the banquet took place the evening before. The next day, she has more to take care of, and what needs to be taken care of is the protection of her people, the Jews. And so she comes in unannounced, as she did before, and it's less hinky than it was the previous time, because now she's got this restored relationship with Ahasuerus, but still, she's coming in unannounced. And before the king and says, if it pleases the king and if I found favor in his sight and the thing seems right to the king and I am pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, which he wrote to annihilate the Jews who are in all the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that will come to my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my countrymen? And Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther and Mordecai the Jew, indeed, I have given Esther the house of Haman. They have hanged him on the gallows because he tried to lay his hand on the Jews. You yourselves write a decree concerning the Jews as you please in the king's name and seal it with the king's signet ring. For whatever is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet ring, no one can revoke. So the king's scribes were called at that time on the third month, which is the month of Sivan, on the 23rd day of the day, and it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded to the Jews, the satraps, the governors, and the princes of the provinces from India to Ethiopia, 127 provinces in all, to every province in its own script, to every people in their own language, and to the Jews in their own script and language. And he wrote in the name of King Ahasuerus, sealed it with the king's signet ring, and sent letters by couriers on horseback riding on royal horses bred from swift steeds. All that sounds familiar because we read chapter 3, because chapter 3 is where the original edict was given, and the same language is used about this edict. And again, you know, Esther comes unannounced before the king. Again, he tips the scepter. Again, she pleads for his people, and she saved herself in chapter 7, and she doesn't leave it there. And again, not to belabor the point, but Esther steps up and does the right thing, not only for herself, but for her people. And again, something that we should do. You have, again, the defense of the Jews here in verses 8-10. Ahasuerus can't abrogate the previous decree, but Ahasuerus can command Esther and Mordecai to write a decree for the Jews' defense, which he does. And so when you're looking at this whole situation that's taking place, where everything that Haman and Satan behind Haman brings to pass, and God and it all gets turned around, who is actually the one who is doing these things? And again, it's God himself that is actually the one who is doing them, these things. And so when they're writing this decree, it's God that's behind the whole issue. Look at verse 11. It says, by these letters, the king permitted the Jews who were in every city to gather together and protect their lives, to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the forces of any people or province that would assault them, both little children and women, and to plunder their possessions. On one day, in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. And so the decree goes out, and in this decree, there is a language telling the Jews that they can protect themselves. Now, this is 9 months before the events are going to take place. And so we've only got a few days since the whole situation with Haman making the decree and Mordecai coming to Esther. And so this is a 9 month lead time to the time when all these people are going to come down against the Jews. Here's the point that I'm making here with God being involved in this whole thing. God allows his people to defend themselves. And so this is in a situation where God's going to come in and he's going to wipe out the enemies of Israel. There are times when he does exactly that. But most times, what God does is he uses the armies of Israel to defend the people of Israel. Sometimes he uses individuals to defend the people of Israel. Sometimes it's David, for example. David on the run is doing Saul's job, King Saul's job, while King Saul is chasing after David. And what he's doing is going out and defending the people of Israel. And so God allows his people to defend themselves. And then when we get to the New Testament, it's like, so how does that work? Because we know in the New Testament, there are passages that talk about the fact that we're not to retaliate against people. So how does this whole thing go together? Here's the first thing I want to point out to you. Is the God in the Old Testament the same God that you have in the New Testament? Yep. Does the God in the Old Testament ever change? Nope. Does he ever change his mind? Nope. He's always the same. And so even if you're talking about things like the law and salvation and that kind of stuff, in the law, you have salvation set because of sacrifice. And so it's not a works trip in the Old Testament and in the New Testament grace. It's the law in the Old Testament, you're not going to fulfill it, so you need grace in the Old Testament, therefore there's a sacrifice, all pointing to the sacrifice that was going to come with Jesus. So God never changes his mind. It's always by grace that people are saved. When the Bible talks about it's by faith that we follow the Lord, that's not a New Testament concept. It's an Old Testament concept, and it literally comes from Noah. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. It comes from Abraham, and the just shall live by faith is in the book of Habakkuk. It's not something that you just get in the New Testament. And so that's something that we need to keep in mind when we're talking about the things that God says or does. So, again, how's this work New Testament style? In Luke 22, 36 through 38, Jesus is talking about the fact that he's about to go to the cross. And previously, he had sent his disciples out and told them not to take money bags or a traveler's bag and that kind of thing. God was going to provide for them. And Jesus, in the passage that I'm going to quote from, talks about the fact that, didn't I tell you to go out? And didn't God take care of you? And they say, yes. And then he says this, but now, he said, take your money in a traveler's bag. And if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one. For the time has come for this prophecy about me to be fulfilled. He was counted among the rebels. Yes, everything written about me by the prophets will come true. And then they said, look, Lord, we have two swords among us. And Jesus says, that's enough. And so you have a thing going on there. Jesus is allowing for self-protection. And again, you lived in a time where it was relatively lawless. It wasn't like our culture. It's like our culture two summers ago. Okay. And so it was relatively lawless. And even to churches, the New Testament is wild and woolly in a lot of ways. There are passages in the New Testament where Paul is exhorting people not to murder other people. Don't go murdering people. You follow Jesus. So stop that whole murdering thing. It's like, what? You have to be told that? And that's the kind of culture that they lived in. And so Jesus at this point says, you know, it's time for you to go buy a sword. And they get all excited about that. Because they're gun nuts. And they pull out they pull out two swords. And they go, "We got them! We got them! You know, we're all ready." And then, you know, anytime I talk about self-defense, it's like, you people are a bunch of gun nuts. By the way, if anybody ever steps into our sanctuary with a gun and is threatening to shoot people, what you need to do is get down really quick, because there's probably about 10 people in the sanctuary that are carrying, and you know, bullets will be flying. I'm goofing around, but that's kind of the attitude around here in a lot of ways. And what Jesus said about that is, that's enough. That's enough. And so I don't have a problem with self-defense. I don't have a problem with people protecting their families and that kind of thing. But that should not be the foremost thing on our mind. Jesus loves people, and he wants people to be saved, right? And so we would like to save them before we shoot them. You know, if you shoot them in the leg and then go over and witness to them, you know, or whatever. And here's a passage that everybody runs into, and this is about personal retaliation. This is in Matthew 5, 39 through 41. Jesus says, "I tell you not to resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too." So how do you reconcile those passages? And again, I'm going to do this with the Old Testament. David, when he was on the run from Saul, would not protect himself. He had two different situations where King Saul was under his power, and in both situations, David let Saul go. In fact, his men, at one point, David's in a cave. You guys probably remember this story. David's in a cave down by En Gedi, and Saul has come down with all his forces seeking out David to try to kill him, because he's afraid he's going to take his kingdom, which that's what God said was going to happen. And so Saul's trying to get David, and he has to go to the bathroom, so he goes into the cave, and he's doing number two. And so he's there, he lifts up his robes, and there he is, and all the men and David are sitting in the back of the cave. And the men are like, God has delivered him into your hands. Can you imagine getting killed while you're... That's the worst, you know? And so David holds these guys back, and he says, you do not do this. We will not touch the Lord's anointed. And David's attitude was, God can take care of this guy who's after me. I'm not going to do it, and neither are you. And then Saul gets up, leaves, goes outside, and David follows him, waits till he gets off a distance, and then says, "Saul, King Saul." And then he starts talking to him about, "You're chasing me because people have lied to you." And basically David says, I've never wanted to do anything to you. I've always been upright towards you. And he gives him this whole thing. And Saul, it says, repents, and only for a time, because it's not too long after that he comes back after David again. Meanwhile, what David is doing is he's going out and protecting the people of Israel. So like I was mentioning before, the whole time that King Saul was chasing David, David was going after Midianites, David was going after people, the Philistines, people who were attacking the people of Israel. David was going out and defending these cities and these villages. He was acting like a king, is what was taking place. And so when I look at the whole issue of self-defense, I guess among Christians should be others' defense. Others' defense. And so I can take a punch. You know, if somebody comes up and slugs me, I can take a punch, right? And I don't have to get back up and pound the guy. I can take two punches. And so Jesus says, if they come up and slap you on your right cheek, turn the other cheek to him also. So that's two punches, but I only have to take two, and then I can pound him. I'm just joking. That's not the point of the passage. I heard about a guy who did that. Guy got saved, guy was a bodybuilder, he was a big guy. Another guy comes up to him and realizes he's a Christian now, and the guy's not supposed to defend himself, so he comes up and smacks him on the cheek, and the guy turns the other cheek, just like the Bible says, and he hits him there, and then he pounds the guy, gets him down on the ground. He says, "You only get two, and then I'm after you." Yeah, he even rhymed it. and actually, the story went on that he witnessed to the guy, and the guy got saved. So sometimes people need a good pounding before they consider Jesus. In any case, That's talking about personal retaliation there. Jesus starts off with, you've heard it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I say to you. And the eye for the eye and a tooth for a tooth was not for individual people. It was for judges. So when somebody came in before you and you were a judge and you were judging their case, the result had to be fair. Eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. And they didn't poke out eyes and pull teeth. There were monetary payments that were made for an eye or for a tooth. In any case, what Jesus is saying there is there's no personal retaliation. You don't go around retaliating against people because they've done things to you. So no personal retaliation. But on the other hand, you do stand up for people who are being hassled and that kind of thing. Dealing with bullies and stuff. My son Nathan, even in our school, we had kids that were out of line and would bully people and things like that. And there were times when my son Nathan got bullied. And one of the things that I told him was, if you're getting bullied by a guy, don't you punch him. Don't you retaliate. You just step back, take it, walk away. That's what you're going to do. And then you watch the guy. Because what's going to happen is the guy's going to go around and do it to somebody else. And as soon as that happens, you best step in and you better push that guy back at that point and do whatever needs to happen to get things fixed there. And so that's what he would do, because that's what David did. And so when you're looking at defense, it needs to be, for a Christian man, it needs to be defense of others in this instance. And I'm not saying that there's not times when you don't need to defend yourselves. I think that ladies, I think you should be carrying things in your purse that will back off an attacker. And so like mace and pepper spray and things like that. I give that to my secretaries. They lose it. And then I give it to them again. And that, in any case, but we don't need to be going around retaliating against people. Then there's the deliverance that's given. And so by these letters, again, verse 11, it says, the king permitted the Jews who were in every city to gather together and protect their lives. And look at this language, to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the forces of any people or province that would assault them, both little children and women, and to plunder their possessions. Annihilate all forces of any people or province that would assault them. Why are they talking about provinces? That's a whole group of people. And the reason is because the Edomites are under Persian control. The Moabites are under Persian control. These are groups of people that have been historically against the Jews, and they've got an edict that says that they can go into Jerusalem and wipe out the Jews that are rebuilding the temple there, for example. The Samaritans, same kind of thing. You're gonna have whole provinces that would rise up against the Jews, and that's why this language is here. Not only that, but the language is something that's familiar, and they got the language from letters that were sent by couriers into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to plunder their possessions. And so what Mordecai and Esther are doing is just taking the exact same language from the edict that Haman came up with and turning it around on these people.
You've been listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities in Kennewick, Washington. If you're wanting to know more about what it means to follow Christ, then please contact our church office by phone at 509-736-2086. You can also look us up online at calvary-tricities.org. There you will find a wide variety of Steve's teachings to listen to or to download for free. If you want to join us for church sometime, we're located at 10611 West Clearwater Avenue in Kennewick, Washington. Our Sunday morning service times are 7:30, 9:15, and 11:15, and our Sunday evening service is at 6 p.m. We also meet on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. We hope you have been blessed today, and will join us again next time on Crosswalk.